there and welcome to The Last Horror Podcast. My name's Christopher Brown. Today what I want to talk to you about is the end of a genre cycle that we've just faced. Genre is cyclical, particularly in horror. They kind of peak and trough in terms of ideas following what's popular. I mean, you know, ultimately, film as a commercial medium, and horror films tend to be, you know, sitting within possibly the slightly more commercial side of this stuff, you know, make them cheap and sell them fast. What that can mean is that filmmakers and that generally, and I don't think they do it deliberately, tend to kind of create a certain cycle. That happened with, most notably, the first cycle was Universal Monsters. And in the early 80s, the slasher boom. But that's pretty much how it normally happens. I mean, you know, in the early noughties, suddenly saw a huge rush of what was deemed torture porn, which seems harsh now. There were, you know, slasher movies with a kind of a grim kind of bent, kind of, you know, almost testing the audience with some violence. And it were designed to kind of, you know, shock by showing the grew, which is something that we could go back to Blood Feast for, you know, and Herschel Gordon Lewis's original trilogy of splatter movies to kind of, you know, get something similar. Now, what I want to talk about today is found footage, mainly because I generally think last year probably marked the end of this cycle with one big final blowout. And it matches the slasher boom almost identically. And I think what it does do is kind of reminds us that, you know, what once seemed like a great idea can, with the very nature of this kind of commercialness, become something that really kind of annoys people quite quickly. And also, the found footage boom is kind of an outlier, possibly, for the way horror cinema may be headed. So, how did this kind of genre start? Well, there were a couple of early, you know, outlying films. So, 1980s Cannibal Holocaust featured found footage. And then, you know, the 1999 film Blair Witch Project, which was a big tempo kind of moment, but not one that ignited the genre beyond itself. But if we're going to talk found footage, you know, let's go back. Let's be more honest with ourselves. The found footage technique and appropriation of other people's films can be found in things like Orson Welles' F is for Fake, where he uses the Elmer de Hoy documentary footage as part of his story and builds a narrative around it. And obviously, you know, the thing about F is for Fake is a lot of what's going on is unreliable narrating. Or in 1994, we can look at Ken Burns, who kind of mixes old baseball footage with actors reading out stuff and to kind of, you know, create a documentary feel to his story of baseball for PBS. And that is a, you know, a technique that's used a lot. 2008, Terence Davis creates a patchwork story about Liverpool and his own experiences of Liverpool using lots of archive footage for his time in the city, mixing poetry and anecdotes and a lot of archival footage, which was never really designed for that initial purpose. In the same way the baseball footage wasn't, you know, it's sports coverage, but then used far more for historical context, for storytelling. Bands tend to use archival footage, particularly, you know, the MTV generation stuff of the 90s and the 80s, you know, bands like Public Enemy to kind of tell a story in terms of how their music, you know, is political. And in that video footage, you know, and that stretches to their music as well by, you know, using their Martin Luther King speeches, etc. So horror films kind of were able to take these concepts of just using footage and taking it and kind of remixing it for a different purpose, but fictionalized that concept. So, you know, whereas F is for Fake is taking real footage and make it into mock footage. A lot of horror, a lot of storytelling uses the device of creating this footage in the first place and then using it for storytelling purposes. Horror is able to take footage and use it in a very particular way, a way of making you scared. So, for example, Cannibal Holocaust, The Blair Witch, and Diary of the Dead as well, the George A. Romero film, was actually an outlier for the boom. Although Paranormal Activity had already made some inroads in film festivals, it hadn't been released yet commercially and therefore not shown its benefit. George Romero, interested in the rise of the YouTube generation and of people filming a lot of the time, lots of things, and kind of creating their own narratives. Something that I think we take quite for granted now, in terms of, you know, vlogs and YouTube celebrity, but also you know, the use of social media for new storytelling. So, for example, you know, you see those, you can see warfare on Facebook with people kind of, it's not called downvote, is it, doing angry emoticons to show their disgust, or for, you know, political stories, Prime Minister's Question Time, or in America, a Sean Spicer press conference, as is now. And that kind of conversational tone felt new to Romero. And indeed, Diary of the Dead was originally meant to be kind of sold as something you'd watch online. So you pay and then you watch it. So the experience would be more complete, and in the sense of in much the same way Blair Witch had its own fake site and that kind of thing. It's only because it was Romero and picked up properly that it had a limited theatrical run and you know, a proper DVD Blu-ray release. The other thing I'd say about Diary of the Dead is at the time it was kind of slammed with people kind of criticizing the concept of, you know, why would they have, you know, why would somebody mix music with this footage to make it more scary? At the time, that's probably it was a good question, because people weren't as aware of how we are currently communicating using social media and using digital video. However, I do think that's changed now, and I think people would take for granted almost, you know, if it, although the Diary of the Dead footage is designed to be people who are just out and about with video cameras filming. You know, for film, and then keep on rolling because what they're capturing is so interesting. You know, if they'd been ghost hunters or zombie hunters, then, you know, almost certainly people would be very convinced that they would, you know, sit down with a MacBook Pro and then edit it in that way.
News agencies are reporting accounts of the dead returning to life.
What was that?
You can't talk about it. Massive. An epidemic. I'm being an epidemic.
What is this about, Jason?
If this turns out to be a big thing, I just want to record it.
And I'm prepared for this sort of failure, like a major disease organization.
Look. Looks hurt.
He's all burned up.
The problem doesn't seem to be that people are waking up dead. The dead people are waking up.
It's not going down!
Shoot in the head!
No, please!
They're not getting the truth from anybody else. All that news is a pack of lies.
I'm dealing with this crisis.
Now. You gotta know that this might be bad.
I'm trying to get home to my family, okay?
Don't bury dead. The shooting head!
People start running out of food, water, gas. They're gonna start shooting at each other.
Trust somebody.
What would you do? Kill us?
I think about it.
Maybe one of them got in already.
You're saying they're all dead?
Yes.
This is a hospital. There's nobody here.
This is a diary of cruelty.
gas is shut off.
I can't do this anymore. Every time we walk in somewhere, somebody dies.
So there you're Outliers, and then Paranormal Activity comes along in 2009, and basically changes the horror landscape away from films like Saw and Hostel, etc. Which, to be fair, were kind of running on empty at that stage, and reinvigorates the genre. So, although created in 2007, it was released in Halloween time around 2009, almost effectively to kind of avoid Saw initially. Paranormal Activity had, when at festivals, had a different ending. It kind of winds down. It kind of fits more into a believable narrative rather than a demonic narrative, I think you say, which obviously that demonic narrative carries through and allows them to create sequels, which they probably couldn't have done with the original ending. And Oren Peli, the director and writer and producer, has created a film very cheaply indeed. What he did was he put lots of still cameras in, got the actors in, and over a few weeks filmed enough footage, basically some magic tricks, you know, things catching fire, you know, in front of the camera, things moving, that kind of thing. What it was very much so was, though, much in the same way that Diary of the Dead was a riff on it, how people are responding to social media and to video and the fledgling YouTube brand. Paranormal Activity was the same. It was designed as, at the time in 2007, 2008, YouTube very much had those kind of can you see the ghost videos. And before YouTube, there were websites that kind of had pictures of what we would call orbs. At the time, so basically what was seen to be perceived to be a paranormal footage of lights moving, etc. Probably more likely, in truth, if we're being honest, night vision mixed with dust particles creating phenomena which could be easily explained away. However, at the time, people obviously were far more willing to believe other stuff. And indeed, you know, if you want to sell footage on your website or you want to kind of be a ghost hunter on television and, you know, your night vision cameras pick up some dust that looks like an orb, then, why wouldn't you try and make some money out of it? Why wouldn't you draw attention to it? I notice these days, those kind of shows that are still going. And I was thinking, if you've done 11 series, surely you would have found something by now. You know, those ghost hunter programs tend to focus on croaky audio phenomena, which is easier to use for suggestions. So, you know, can you hear that? Oh, yeah, that's definitely says Satan is Lord, obviously. And that's just the way, you know, that's the nature of that kind of entertainment showmanship, you know, almost Barnum-esque. The Paranormal Activity, though, did a few things. It actually tied into something that was already happening online, as much as Diary of the Dead did. But it tied in at a time when people were slightly more open and suggested to it. YouTube was a bit more established. And people were more willing to believe, I think, in that story, narrative storytelling video. A lot more people have video cameras, and it was more camera phones with the iPhone being used, and people, you know, starting to record. Although things like Twitter were still in their infancy, and therefore, you know, uploading videos to things like social media was still a way away by some stretch. But people were aware of using things like webcams for MySpace, and they were more technologically savvy. You know, you didn't need a digital camera to start filming stuff. You know, if you had an iPhone, which a lot of people did by that stage, yeah, the iPhone 3 was out, which was kind of the big jump forward, wasn't it? then you could, you know, capture your own footage in reasonably good quality. So I think people were more into the idea. And it was a hit. I mean, it did really well, which led to what you would expect from horror and Hollywood is that they would build more of them fast. Now, the problem with Paranormal Activity from that point of view is that it's a slow film. It doesn't provide a lot of scares. And it really needs a busy audience, busy cinema, everyone kind of looking at the screen really intently, very quiet, and then some bang would happen and everyone would jump. Classic horror scare tactic in truth, but using, you know, static cameras. So when you watch it at home, you're a bit like, yeah, I'm literally just watching empty rooms here. And then something would fall over and you're like, yeah, I'm still watching an empty room where something's just fallen over. And, you know, the escalation of the activity can take 45 to 50 minutes, so they can feel very slow. But we got six of them in the end, of varying quality. For the purist out there, Paranormal Activity 3 is probably the more interesting of them, although it still has its problems. And that almost certainly because the fact that it uses VHS footage rather than digital footage to kind of grab your attention and kind of freshen up the story. 4 is boring and, you know, kind of run out of steam. And 5 uses a 3D gimmick to kind of, put the ticket prices up, but also kind of liven things up and kind of fails miserably. And there's other stuff, but, you know, that's that overarching phenomenon. That's your Friday the 13th, Halloween for this cycle. And then you get, you know, other things that are away from horror. So Chronicle and Europa Report using a sci-fi as its narrative structure. And indeed, you know, films like Man Bites Dog, which is a mockumentary rather than found footage, really, or the strangeness of the Japanese guinea pig films, which designs effectively to look like snuff movies and utilizes videotape to kind of add to its viciousness. A technique used again in America with the August Underground toe tag pictures films, which are again are designed to look like you've kind of found this videotape and it's just horrific and horrible and nasty. So, you know, these outliers sit as well within the initial kind of run up, but also, you know, Cloverfield comes out in 2008, so before Paranormal Activity gets its claws into the horror genre. And does very well. Again, it's a sci-fi. I mean, it is a monster film, really, if we're being honest. I suppose you could say, you know, people die in it, so it's a horror movie. But, you know, it's very much a sci-fi film. And like a, you know, what if Godzilla, but iPhones kind of thing. So, you know, there was this move towards this footage, which people could understand. But horror definitely was the business that took it and ran with it. So regardless of lots of different narratives and different, you know, some big budget films like Cloverfield, for example, it was really horror that kind of really grabbed on to this genre and started churning films out. And one of the reasons for that was because of Grave Encounters and films of that ilk.
Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Grave Encounters.
Psychiatric hospitals like this were seen as sort of a dumping ground for embarrassing family members rather than a place that they could go to actually get help.
Many of them were severely disturbed, truly frightening.
I swear to God that I saw someone right at the end of the hall there.
And he swears that something pushed him off the ladder.
You guys see this window here? I lock it up real good at night. Come back in the morning. Sometimes this thing's wide open.
Tonight, my crew and I, using the most sophisticated in ghost hunting equipment,
we're in search of definitive proof of spirits that were unsettled in life and possibly unsettled in the afterlife.
Is there someone here with us?
What if this is something real?
Did you get that?
TC, you rolling, man?
Yeah.
I'm gonna document everything because when we get out of this place, people are gonna wanna see this.
Matt and Houston are gone. We just need to focus on finding a way out.
Grave Encounters was a Canadian film, and what its core concept was, imagine ghost hunters on TV, but imagine if they actually found something. And the film uses videotape and did lots of digital video and green night vision and stuff like that, and they run around the hospital for quite a long time, can't get out for plot contrivance reasons, if we're being honest, although it's put to supernatural, and people start disappearing. And Grave Encounters does well, and it does well for a few reasons. One is that it manages to jockey YouTube's algorithm for a few reasons. One was that it was well tagged up and had some good SEO, but also it had a very striking image as its play button of a ghost face with its, the mouth wide open. It looks very, very scary. And so a lot of people watched the Grave Encounters trailer. And, if you get enough people to watch your advert, then enough people will watch your low-budget film because of curiosity, because, of whatever hit rate that is. And, it was a solidly made trailer. And therefore, Grave Encounters proved that low-budget DV-style video could make businesses money. And on things like iTunes and, the supermarket Blu-ray, video, DVD circuit. To the point that it actually got a sequel, a kind of meta version. Yeah, it's kind of so Grave Encounters 2 is quite a meta movie in truth. What it does is set in our world, as it were, and Grave Encounters is seen as being fake footage. A stand-in movie, but some filmmakers believe it to be real, so they investigate, and then terrible things happen, and etc. And exactly what you would imagine from a found footage movie then goes on, particularly a sequel to that film. And again, it did really well, but critically did not receive the love that the first film forgot. Critically, the first film was mixed in its reviews, and second one was towards the negative. These films by the Vicious Brothers have then gone on to make pretty much a standard horror film, maybe in a 1990s vibe, with Extraterrestrial, which is an alien abduction movie. Not found footage, although they may flip to people on cameras at some point, but not really. Feels very much like the kind of movie I would have grabbed off the video shelf in my teenage years. Promises of aliens and lots of gru, but really not that exciting, if I'm being honest. But that's a standard Hollywood sci-fi, not sci-fi, yeah, sci-fi horror movie, I suppose. So this found footage film technique effectively says, in quite a short period of time, that you can make horror films cheap, very cheaply, get them on iTunes, use things like YouTube, and potentially make quite a lot of money, which is the green light for everybody to make more of them. And the problem with this is that because they're so easy to make, you kind of don't need to worry too much about them being good. You can create a standard found footage movie using a couple of iPhones, some actors, a disused location, maybe a mate who's got some After Effects if you want to go particularly wild with your scares, but you can do it with... You can go the Blair Witch route and not show the monster if you really wanted to. And Mark becomes saturated incredibly quickly with a wide variety of films, to the point that initially a lot of these films are sold predominantly as being found footage. So things like The Tapes and The Upper Footage, or both kind of, they're advertised as found footage movies. By the time we shuffle along to 2014, 2015, they're almost hiding that stuff away. Films like Exists, which is from Eduardo Sanchez, who made the first Blair Witch movie, is a big found footage movie, as is Willow Creek. And those two films are very good films. They're good, solid found footage movies. But you look at the cover, you wouldn't know they were found footage movies. It's already been seen as being a problem that can get in the way of selling the film. And we are completely saturated. And the problem, of course, the sad thing about that is that the good stuff doesn't necessarily get found. You get films like VHS and VHS 2, which kind of get a good cult following, which are anthology horror films, really, but using a found footage gimmick. And there's fatigue in the horror community setting. Fast forward to 2016, and if Blair Witch was the film that kind of alluded to the possibilities of big money-making horror films using this gimmick, it was also the one that probably signaled the death knell to it. On any traditional scale, the Adam Wingard Blair Witch film would be considered a success. Its production budget was around about $5 million. They will have spent quite a chunk on advertising that film, but that's double that. And it made $45 million. So in terms of low-budget horror, or that mid-range horror, which is the sweet spot for a lot of businesses like Lionsgate, that's where they do a lot of their business with films like The Conjuring, etc. It did all right. Not massive, but it was disappointing because the original Blair Witch obviously made, a lot of money. It was culturally significant, and the Wingard Blair Witch was critically kind of mixed in its reviews and culturally kind of pretty much ignored. So it just made money from interest, it made money from interested parties that wants to go and see a Blair Witch movie. So even in that sense of success, and certainly not a bombing, it kind of said that there probably wasn't as much of a market for this anymore. And indeed, Paranormal Activity 5 also indicates that the market slowly kind of drained away. So your horror fans, your core fans, have basically, after a flurry of interest, have moved away from found footage. And we're waiting for the next big thing, if I'm being honest. I don't think it is going to be the, there's, you know, I don't think it is going to be art house horror, because I don't think art house horror is a genre. But, you know, there's a lot of interest in horror films, but there's always been a number of interesting horror films out there. It's just how we're currently discussing them. So, yeah, but I think the thing about found footage is because it's so cheap, because the margins can be so tight, because you can sell this on iTunes, you can advertise it on YouTube, the genre has probably lasted longer than normally we would do, because the money men haven't had to jump in and stop this stuff being made, because ultimately you or I could make one of these ourselves. I'm not saying we'd make it good. So let's go back to the late 70s and early 80s. The situation is exactly the same, but the genre is slasher and the budgets and the risks are higher. So you have some films that are outliers. Obviously, the Blair Witch and Cannibal Holocaust. But in that case, we're talking Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. Fright, the British film, in the early 1970s. And Black Christmas, which is as much of a slasher as anything else. Films that were, a lot of those early outlier films were influenced by Giallo from Italy. Then a couple of films over a couple of years kind of really sparked the audience's interest. But, you know, those films have been made already, you know. Toolbox Murders is pre-Halloween, but doesn't take on the influences of Halloween. It obviously can't take on the influence of Halloween because it's before it. But, you know, Toolbox Murders is a slasher movie. Just its form is odd. Halloween does very well. And Friday the 13th does very well. And then those two films go into a similar kind of cycle. And then there are film outliers like Nightmare on Elm Street as well, which kind of subvert the genre. But at its heart, it's still genre, and that continues it. But the reality is, the low-budget slasher movies that made the money off The Boon were dead by 1984, and then you just had these big tentpole films. So why do slasher movies, why were there so many of those made over a short period of time? Well, you need a cast of unknowns, which is cheap. You can film it on 16mm, which is cheap. And it's in, limited locations. And people will watch it as long as you deliver what you need to, which is, young people and violence. So again, for people who are starting out on the industry, who want to make a film, it's easy to make. However, the risks were higher because the films weren't as, because the films were more expensive to make, basically. So what we've got now is the benefit of technology kind of creating that boom, but it's been extended. And we've had this kind of found footage death throes for the last couple of years, because of the ease to make it, how easy it was to make those films. If you want to take an even higher risk, look at Universal. They realise there's money to be made from their monster movies and seem very keen. And then, as time goes on and they make more and more of them and sequel after sequel, the audiences tire of them. And then by the 1940s, we're into the Albert and Costello comedies versions of them, and it's finally fragmented and being repeated to the extent that the audience again is tired. It's only in the 1950s when they realise that there's money to be made from them due to TV and re-releases that they decide to plump some money down for Creature from the Black Lagoon. So what am I getting at? That found footage is a surprisingly large genre considering how little people seem to enjoy it. I think the good stuff's very good. But I know a lot of people are really tired of it. I would say I think it's kind of at its end. Although films like Unfriended indicates that the people would still be willing to watch something as long as it's within the right medium. So, that a horror film based on a Skype call, although now being done, grabs the attention far more. I think moving forward, the next big thing in horror will probably be device-led. So we're looking at a shift in terms of probably apps, app games, or if VR ever really takes off, people can be bothered to really knuckle down and get into it. That there would be definitely a market, I think, for those kind of experiences as well. Now, where they sit in terms of horror generally, horror films, who knows? I doubt people are going to be that willing to spend 2 hours playing a virtual reality game. But we'll see. Beyond that, your guess is as good as mine. These things flare up. I'd love to see a return to the violent alien abduction movie, which to be fair to Extraterrestrial did try and do, but didn't do it particularly brilliantly well. But something will catch the public's imagination, and almost certainly will show that there's always money to be made. Okay, thanks very much for listening. If you want to get hold of me, please do. My email address is christopher@thelasthorrorpodcast.com, or you can go on Twitter @orange_monkey, or you can go to the website, thelasthorrorpodcast.com, leave any comments on the articles, there's all sorts on there. Just very quickly, I'm just chatting to Charlie, who interviewed last week about soundtracks. Just wanted to put a little correction on what he said. He said that Creature from the Black Lagoon only featured content from other soundtracks. That isn't true. It was kind of a matchwork kind of thing, using 5 different composers. So he just wanted to make that to clarify that. But again, fantastic interview. I really enjoyed it. And as I say, do listen to his show, The Sound of Fear, because it's excellent. Next week is a bit up in the air at the moment. I might have another interview with somebody, depending on if we get to meet up, because I haven't carried it out yet. If not, we will do something else. But I'm sure it'll be fantastic. Anyway, till next week, take care, speak to you soon. Goodbye.